big man. Treat you like you're a little man.
In attendance, for the millions watching around the world. Let's get ready to suck it!
Oh, I love the FCC. I love internet radio. We're not controlled by the FCC. How is everybody doing here today? It is Chris McSwiggin along with Jason Cordner. And we're back, baby. We got our own wrestling show now, Off the Ropes, as you hear. Jason Cordner is here with me live from Brooklyn, New York. Jason, how are you doing tonight?
I'm good. How you feeling?
Well, I'm feeling good that this has probably been the best Raw is War in the past, 8 months, I'd say?
Easily.
But I do have some gripes. I do have some gripes with it. And for those of you who don't know what this show is going to be about, we're going on at 10 o'clock. Raw is still got an hour left. What we're going to be doing is we're going to be covering live on the air the end of Raw, anything we see that we feel that we need to comment on. But we do have an agenda. We're not just going to sit here and freelance while watching TV. We do have an agenda. And so while we're on commercial break here, I did kind of want to talk a little bit about the bombshell that was dropped in the beginning of the night. So this is a spoiler alert. So if all of you are listening to this and haven't seen Raw yet, I'm sorry. You know, I guess – I'm going to be the one to break the news here. I'm the Stephen A. Smith of wrestling news in that sense then. So for those of you who have not seen it, Shane McMahon came out during Stephanie McMahon's award thing that Vince had set up, and big hoopla back and forth. Shane's like, oh, she doesn't know. And I don't think anybody really still knows what Shane was referencing, doesn't know what. I still don't know what the hell Shane was talking about, but apparently Shane McMahon wants control of Raw. He says Raw is going downhill, which it is. I agree. He says that Shane is that Raw is, you know, they've been running to the ground, this, that, and that, and that. Wants control of Raw. Okay, cool. Understand that, Shane. Big thumbs up. That's fine. Vince goes and says, just like in the old Attitude Era days, you can do it, but you got to win your match. You got to win your match to do it. Now, first thing that comes to my mind is it's going to be Shane versus Vince. That's the first thing that I thought, and I would have been okay with that. What I'm not okay with was the bombshell announcement that was made. For those of you who don't know, the bombshell announcement was it's going to be Shane McMahon, 46 or something like that? 46-year-old, gray-haired Shane McMahon, who doesn't even look like Shane McMahon anymore, doesn't sound like Shane anymore. He's got a deeper kind of a lower kind of a thing, okay? Doesn't even look or sound like the same Shane. Is going to go up against the ancient pharaoh-aged Undertaker at WrestleMania, okay? Now, not only is it going to be against Undertaker at WrestleMania, it's going to be in Hell in a Cell. Great, okay? But to me, this doesn't work. And I'll tell you why it doesn't work, Jason, and then I'll get your opinion on it in a second. It doesn't work because... Okay, Shane McMahon gets control of the company. He gets control of Raw is War. He gets control of all that stuff if he beats The Undertaker at Mania. Okay, everybody was shocked. A lot of people were displeased when Brock Lesnar, who is a monster, who was in the middle of one of the biggest pushes in the WWE in the last couple years, had beaten The Undertaker and his undefeated streak at WrestleMania. Now you're going to put little, 5 foot, 640-pound Shane McMahon up against a legend like The Undertaker with the company on the line and The Undertaker's streak, which is already tainted. In my opinion, I don't think that they should have done that, but I understand why they did. If Undertaker beat Shane, this segment made no sense. Then it was just a waste of airspace that they needed to fill, okay? But he's not going to beat Shane because they're trending, and this is their new thing. They're going to have Shane take over Raw. So Shane is going to kill The Undertaker's credibility even more by beating The Undertaker at WrestleMania in Hell in a Cell, giving him his second WrestleMania loss. And I can understand losing to Brock Lesnar. Everybody loses to Brock Lesnar eventually. But Shane McMahon beating the legendary Hall of Famer, dead man phenom, The Undertaker at WrestleMania in Hell in a Cell. I mean, okay, Shane versus Vince. If you beat Vince, you get the company. Great. Awesome setup. Father versus son. Chairman versus, I don't know, what is he, CEO, whatever it is. And those two go at it, and he beats Vince, and he stands on Vince's chest with his arms up, and he now controls the company. Boom. But that's a great storyline. Facing The Undertaker at Hell in a Cell, it does nothing for storyline advancement. And all that does is just kill the legacy of a character that you worked so hard to build. But Jason, you mentioned how you do like it a little bit, or no?
No, I like it. I like it a lot. It also indicates that Cena's not ready and won't be returning from WrestleMania, which is, you know, that's a bummer. But hey, we get Shane O'Mac back for the first time in like 7 years. And he has some, I mean, you're right. He's a little older, but he'll still be able to hang with the Undertaker in the ring. And he's a stuntman. He'll perform, he'll probably break every bone in his body, but he will make it worth watching. I'm happy that Shane's back. This was a curveball that nobody saw.
Nobody saw it coming, but I mean, do you understand what this does to The Undertaker? Sure. I understand that Undertaker has always been a company man, and he's always given pushes to people here and there when they've needed it. But for Shane McMahon to beat The Undertaker, there's got to be something. There's got to have to be some sort of a, you know, Undertaker getting screwed in a sense for him to do it. Because if he just flat out pins The Undertaker 1-2-3, I mean, Shane doesn't even have a finishing move. Okay, so I mean, if it took 4 F5s to put down The Undertaker, what the hell is Shane McMahon going to do? You know, so to me, I don't like it. I love The Undertaker. Maybe I'm just biased. I also love Shane McMahon. But if I was working WWE creative, I would definitely have it be father versus son for control of the company, with Shane winning and standing on his chest and with his arm up and blah, 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 putting Vince down, out with the old and with the new. Undertaker to me doesn't make any sense. You're just going to tarnish his legacy even further. And I don't know. And plus, you might even kill your son in the process. I mean, Undertaker is still a nasty man, even at 50 years old. So, I mean, I don't know. One thing I'll say
about Shane, though, it's going to remind me of that Orton versus Undertaker. Like, that was the first time where I thought the Undertaker might lose at WrestleMania. And Orton was very resourceful. Shane's pretty much going to be like that. He's going to be very resourceful. Expect a lot of run-ins. Expect a very entertaining match. I like this curveball, but it also shows you how depleted the roster is and how little faith they had in the Wyatts. Because we heard rumblings about Strowman, and clearly that's not happening. That's not happening with Brock either. So they were definitely in a bind, and I'm glad that Shane was able to help out and come back for one more match.
We have a very special guest calling in, and I actually have been telling a lot of people about this, and in recent next couple of weeks, we're going to have some pretty interesting phone callers in, and I won't spoil it too much for you, but we do have some people who already have some interest in this who will be calling, but again, that will be a little bit later on, starting next week, but we do have a very special guest, one of the hosts of Satellite Sundays, and the co-founder of Overtime.News, where you can go on to hear this show. Co-founder along with myself, Dustin Bork, is here in studio with us. Real quick, just wants to chime in on this. Dustin, what do you feel about the bombshell announcement that was dropped?
Fellas, you can hear me all right?
Yeah, we got you.
Yeah, you saw. Got you.
All right. So, first of all, good luck with this whole shebang. I hope you guys are able to tear it down every week. and I'm in and out. I'll be listening, whether or not I can like call in and chime in on a couple of things. That's dependent upon my daughter.
Sorry to spoil Raw for you. I know you don't watch it till later, but I figured that was an announcement that had to be given.
I had this gut feeling that there was going to be something worth watching, so I started it a little earlier than I would normally. Like, it's still recording. I won't finish it until way later, or I'll hear what you guys are saying, and then I'll know what happened. But I wanted to bring this up. I'm thinking in my head, I was writing down notes as I listened to you guys enter the show, and I had like three main points I needed to get across because I think they're game changers. What about Shane bringing back the Invasion? What if NXT was the new takeover? What if SmackDown? Like, what if Vince said you can't have Raw, but you can take over SmackDown, and then you had that old school, you know, one roster coming in and messing with another roster, bringing back a level of importance to not just Raw, because nobody watches SmackDown. It's arguable that NXT is a better brand than Raw right now. So I think personally, when I saw Shane show up, I was like, wow, okay. And then as they started to talk, I'm like, oh my God, they're going to set this up and he's going to take over NXT. Because I remember Triple H saying, I don't want NXT to be the training camp for Raw. I want it to be an alternative brand. He wants to create NXT as an alternative brand to Raw and SmackDown. He doesn't want it to be like, well, you got to start in NXT and work your way up, and NXT is the training camp, the D-Leagues. That's not what Triple H wants. So I was thinking of that. I also thought about, what if there's one last feud between the McMahon families where he's got his crew of guys, and then, you know, the Authority has their crew. And don't you think that would be a perfect way to bring Rollins back as a face? And all of a sudden, Shane needs a main guy, and somehow they either convince Roman to stick with WWE, like Raw Authority, and not an Invasion type thing. And all of a sudden, you've got a Rollins that goes and decides, well, guess what? I'm back. You guys took my belt away from me. I never lost it. And I'm going to go with the new thing. I thought that would be a huge setup for Rollins. And then I also in response to your whole, you liked how they said, you know, the she doesn't know this thing's tanking. How is that not exactly like Rusev and Lana getting married in real life? WWE having pizza on their face, being like, crap, we got to address this now. They're making fun of themselves. Everybody knows WWE.
They should have addressed it 6 months ago. I mean, this show, Raw hasn't been worth watching, in my opinion, in a very long time. And so, I mean, I think that they're a little bit late to the party here. But it's good that they're doing something.
I think that finally they're like, what are we going to do? And I think, honestly, Shane came through with the Hail Mary, or maybe it was Triple H. He's the brains of the whole operation, honestly. You know, he's been the creative guy for the last 20 years in that company, whether anybody wants to admit it or not, whether it's for just himself or helping out the brand in general. And somebody threw a Hail Mary and was like, what if we just bring Shane back and see what kind of response we get with that? And, I mean, obviously it was incredible. I mean,
well, the crowd freaked out. I mean, they were marking out hard.
Shane was sweating and tears were running out of the side of his eyes. So he was pumped. So I think because of that reaction, the first two things I mentioned are a real possibility. And to dispute Chris's thing, he doesn't have to beat Taker to make this a big deal, because he could – realistically, I'm sour at the thought of it too, because I didn't even think he deserved to lose the streak, because now, like, what's the point of Undertaker going to WrestleMania? I don't care anymore. He's already lost.
Yeah.
If he goes to WrestleMania against Shane – that where if Shane wins, he gets control of the company. Obviously, like what you said, it's predictable. Shane's going to win somehow. But
Dustin, would you agree that it taints the Undertaker's legacy even more if he loses to Shane?
I think honestly, the only hit his legacy is taking is that one loss to Lesnar, which even when you said I can see everybody losing it. No. Undertaker was larger than life. Undertaker was a horror movie, spirits, you know, the devil, this, that, BS. Brock Lesnar should not have beaten The Undertaker if he wanted to uphold The Undertaker's image. of an immortal.
Well, Taker agreed to it. I mean, Taker behind the scenes. I mean, we know that's all kayfabe. Behind the scenes, Taker agreed to have that happen.
Look who Brock's playing against now. Are you serious? Ambrose to get a push, but now it's looking like Brock is going to do the Rock thing where he's just putting guys over, where he's just there to take his paychecks. He was on the Stone Cold podcast. I don't know if you guys remember a while back.
I remember that. Mm-hmm.
And he flat out said he has an exit strategy already in place. That was 6 months ago. He has an exit strategy in place, meaning he knows where the end is. He knows when it will end. So this is not like a Brock's here for the long run thing. No, he's here to collect his checks, and then he's going to go back to his farm with Sable and live the good life. He doesn't really even want to be doing this. He's doing it for the money. So my whole thing with Brock is, what the hell? He's turning into, you know, the Hollywood version of The Rock. He's just there to put guys over. So I'm happy that Ambrose is the next guy who's going to get put over, because I've been saying Ambrose needs a push. But, man, I just think Brock's a waste. It was a waste for The Undertaker to lose his streak to Brock. If you're going to make him lose his streak, lose it in the family. Lose it to Kane, like Demon Kane, Bad Kane, not the doofus without his mask on, you know, corporate Kane, none of that crap. If you're going to make The Undertaker lose his streak, a larger-than-life character that scared kids, you don't have him lose
scared
to
me.
Brock Lesnar. You don't have him lose to Brock Lesnar. But so those were my main points, was I could see Shane bringing back the Invasion. I could see Shane recruiting Rollins, because Rollins won't have a place anymore. But they got to keep the family feud going. I think if they keep the family feud going, it'll be a great injection of the Attitude Era without the blood, the sex, the cleavage, because it'll give you that taste again.
Dustin, do you feel that perhaps it should have been Shane versus Vince at WrestleMania?
I did.
It doesn't matter what you think!
Sorry,
yeah,
I had
that
to.
Clip
he did,
in there.
He did that to me so many times.
I put
times.
That clip in there, yeah, and I knew it was only a matter of time until he was going to do that to me. So, but I that's fine with me. More power to you. My thing is, though, look at Vince's face. It almost looks like the left side of his face had a stroke. And I'm worried about him, and that's why I think they're doing a lot of this stuff now, because I think they actually are worried about, you know, their dad at this point, because he's, you know, while he's held up over the years, he's definitely starting to finally show signs, you know, that he needs to get the hell out of there. And this whole legacy thing was a joke the second they said Stephanie. I thought they were going to treat it one of two ways. I thought it was going to be a joke of an award and we'll never hear from it again, which is the case now. Or they were going to do like a Triple H, which would have annoyed people, but people would have respected. Because
I thought
it
was going to be Cena, honestly. I really did. Yeah, I thought that was that was going to be Cena coming back and getting that award, I thought is what it was going to be. I mean, he beat Triple H's streak for the most titles. So, I mean, Flair's streak, rather. So
no, he didn't beat Flair's streak. He's still
Isn't he? He's one shy? Oh, no. I thought he did. Yeah.
That's why the back of his T-shirt says 15X, because that's the number he's got to get to. But which I was fully convinced when they start branding the number that they're going to give it to him. But then they decided, I don't know if it was injuries or what. You don't put 15-time champion on the back of a shirt and then not let him win it. The hell was that? I'm curious to hear your opinion, but I got to jet out of here. All right. You guys have a good show.
All right.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for calling in. So for those of you who may have just missed what had happened on Raw, well, we were talking a little bit about the beginning of Raw, it was the same thing as last night. It was Big Show, Kane, and Ryback going up against the Wyatts. And in this case, the Wyatts won. Okay, great. What Wyatts win? Looks like we actually have another caller here, but we'll get to you in 1 second, caller. But we just had the Wyatts come up. Okay, and to me, I don't understand the Wyatts push, because the Wyatts dominate on Raw. They took out Brock Lesnar a couple weeks ago. They did a whole – the Wyatts are awesome on Raw, but they lose every pay-per-view match that they're in.
Every
single
one. It doesn't make any sense.
And to me, if you're going to push a team like that, great, push them. Give them you know, some sort of a recognition thing. And don't just let them be Raw gangsters, you know what I'm saying? We have a caller, which I will get to in 1 second, but I just want to say I'm bored with that whole – Big Show, Kane, whatever. You got to give the Wyatts a better storyline than that. You know?
They
and
do.
To me, that
they
was that, that was that was a wasted match, in my opinion. You got 3 hours to fill. So you have to have a couple of those, but to me, that was a wasted match. Caller, you come up as Turnasol 217. Now, where are you calling from? What's your name?
Hey guys, this is Peyton Manning. I love the show.
Peyton Manning. Well, great. the forehead himself, Peyton Manning.
You betcha.
Well, it's great that Peyton Manning loves us. We've been on air for all of 15 minutes, so I guess we made that big of an impact. Peyton, are you talking anything
yeah,
at all
man,
about
it's really me,
what
the guy who won the Super Bowl and is in all those commercials?
Yeah,
Chicken
yes.
Parm.
Wonderful.
Chicken Parm.
Omaha, Chicken Parm. Yes, wonderful.
It was a heck of a game. Am I right?
It was a heck of a game. You out of Budweiser now?
Yep.
Yeah, beautiful, beautiful. Okay, Peyton, we'll run with this. We will run with this. What do you think about Shane versus Taker in Hell in a Cell at WrestleMania?
Everyone says the only reason we won was because of our defense, but I think it was because Cam Newton is a little crybaby bitch.
Okay. Well, Peyton showing a little attitude error coming in through here. Okay, Peyton, so you're saying the
Come
defense
on, Cam,
wins
look at me. Everybody's calling me a rapist lately, and you don't see me crying about it.
So, okay. Now, Peyton, let me ask you one quick question here about Cam Newton, and then I'll get your take
uh-huh.
on something else. But when you were sitting on the sidelines in Super Bowl 50, and you were watching your defense, Von Miller and all them, just go to town on Cam Newton, what were you thinking on the sideline?
Cam seems like one of those uppity ones.
It doesn't right? matter what you think.
Old school, Peyton Manning. Thank you very much, Peyton, for calling
There's
in.
There's been
that,
a lot of talk lately about some allegations in my past. I'll give you a hint. It involves my penis and a woman who wasn't into it.
Very good, very good. Peyton Manning just called us in, ladies and gentlemen. Peyton Manning, that took me by shock. Hey, we have a night of curveballs tonight. That was wonderful. Peyton Manning just called us in. I just hit him with the rock button. A little bit of swag coming out of the Peyton man. But Jason, let me ask you, because I'm not quite sure that was a prank. I'm not quite sure that was an actual caller who has an identity crisis. I'm not sure. But either way, I love it because that's the kind of thing that I used to do. I used to, back in my radio days in college, used to make prank calls all the time. So that was awesome, Peyton Manning. Work on the accent a tiny bit, but you're almost there, buddy. So we have that. We have the Shane match that we've beat like a dead horse. Now we know it's Brock Lesnar versus Dean Ambrose. Jason, you're a big Dean guy. Dustin pointed out that perhaps this is just the Ambrose push finally, that Ambrose is going to go out and beat the beast Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania, and that Lesnar is just putting people over at this point. Do you think that's really a push for Dean, or is it just like, okay, he beats Brock Lesnar, but it's not for a title, it's not for anything, he gets his WrestleMania moment finally?
I think you remember. I don't know if you remember when Bret Hart versus Stone Cold at WrestleMania, where Stone Cold got that push and he got the initial support of the fans after he would not submit. He wouldn't tap out. I expect Dean to get that kind of a beating, and maybe that'll be his push towards the main event. Main event title status down the road. I don't know if he's gonna win, but he's definitely not gonna submit. He's definitely not gonna give up. And we'll see what happens at Mania. But I think it's going to be a very good match, very entertaining match. I'm happy for Dean to be in that spot, to be trusted in that spot. Because, again, a lot of speculations had Brock versus a Wyatt member, which wouldn't have made sense because, what's the point? So I'm glad to see Dean get a push. What I expect down the line is a Shield triple threat at SummerSlam, but we'll talk about that at a later date. But I'm happy with the Dean situation.
Coming out now is Sasha Banks, and holy crap, is Sasha Banks hot. My goodness.
Oh, yeah.
I would do unforgivable things to Sasha Banks. Keep mentioning it. What were you going to say?
I was going to say, speaking of Sasha Banks, don't be surprised if we see a triple threat match. It's pretty much the NXT girls on the main roster having their WrestleMania moment.
Yeah, I would enjoy that. I mean, to me, though, and this was sort of – this wasn't one of the topics that we had discussed going in, but it does count as a WrestleMania match because she will be there. But going up against Charlotte is what I feel is going to be the case. But for the girls now, they call it the Divas title, and that's exactly what a lot of these girls are. They are Divas. But I think – thinking it should be back to the women's title. I mean, it really should because Diva sort of gives them this – stigma put on them that they're prissy, they're pretty, you know, they're all Barbies, all dolled up, this and that. I mean, diva is a word that it's often has a negative connotation to it, and now
True.
you're gonna put that on your title. And you know, these girls, yeah, I like the NXT girls that Stephanie introduced. I like Sasha, obviously. Now Charlotte has become, you know, that heel that is, I actually kind of am digging what she's doing right now. And then you're looking at Becky Lynch, who's becoming more and more of a jobber every week, which is unfortunate. But to me, these girls don't stack up. Lita, Trish Stratus, you know, Jacqueline back in the day, Ivory back when they used to have the women's hardcore matches and things like that. Sable, even, you know, those girls were actual legit fighters. Miss Kitty, China.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I can keep going on, you know. And so these girls, yeah, they're athletic. Yeah, they're good to look at. But they're not. You know, you're not going to see the type of epic women's matches that you saw with Lita and all those. But also, if one wants to talk about women's matches, now we're probably going to have every feminist in the country calling in arguing this point. But I enjoyed the TNA knockouts a lot more because the TNA knockouts, yeah, they're great to look at, but those are some tough chicks. And, you know, I mean, I personally feel like at, you know, 6 feet tall, 240 pounds, I feel like, you know, Velvet Sky could beat me up. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, yeah, I think I could, you know, I could step on Sasha Banks. You know what I'm saying? So, to me, I don't feel like these girls are – I feel like they're working with the talent that they have right now, but I just don't feel like these are the superstars. Like, Lita is never – you know, she's going to be a Hall of Famer. Trish Stratus is going to be a Hall of Famer. You know, those girls back in the day had some actually pretty epic storylines. I mean, I remember coming home as a kid in middle school and early high school, and I was actually interested in the Divas matches back then, not because I was like, wow, they're so hot, they're cute. No, but they actually had some good storylines involved in them. Right now, the storylines for the women in the WWE anyway are predictable. And I mean, I can see it coming a mile away. And, you know, they don't have very many to work with and very much talent to work with. Whereas in TNA, those girls are part of the main storylines every single week with the TNA knockouts. So, to me, I just think TNA had the right thing. Now you can't even find them on TV anymore, so it's kind of unfortunate in that sense. WWE squashed that bug, but so that's gonna be another WrestleMania match. The Wyatts, God knows what they're gonna do. Now Roman Reigns versus Triple H. I wish I had a snore button on here, and maybe next week I'll have a button for somebody snoring. But that is just a terrible matchup. But would you agree that that's predictable? You saw that coming a mile away.
You saw that coming a mile away. But I think they're gonna be forced to interject something into that match, kind of like what they did last year, where we got the Seth Rollins cash in. Something has to go down. I mean, it's just gonna be the main event's gonna be a snooze fest at Jerry World.
Unless
you
something
do
happens.
Not want that. Something has to happen.
Is there any way that Triple H leaves as the champion still, or is this set up where people can smell it from down the road that Roman Reigns is going to win the belt again?
Well, two things I can see either happening. I could either see The Rock helping Roman win the belt, or maybe The Rock helps Shane win his match against The Undertaker, and then Shane somehow gets Seth Rollins involved. I mean, we got 6 weeks to speculate, but the main event has to change. It can't be straight up Triple H versus Roman Reigns. Nobody wants to see it. I mean, this guy is terrible on the mic. He's average in the ring at best.
I mean, they booed him on Fastlane. He won the match, and they booed him. I mean, they don't want to see it.
I think this is why they brought Shane in early. I remember when we were talking in production why they didn't save Shane towards the end. I think this is why. They knew we were all upset. They knew we was going to come out here and vent and bitch and moan. So they curved us a fastball where they gave us Shane coming back, giving him an opponent and all of that, just to silence the critics for the meantime.
I mean, I still have goosebumps. That Shane McMahon thing in the beginning was pay-per-view-esque. of a moment, you know? And I that's one of the better Raw moments. Now, again, I still don't know what the hell Shane's talking about, where Shane's like, oh, he doesn't know, or she doesn't know. You know, she doesn't know what that deal – we still are not clear on exactly what that deal is because we haven't seen Shane in years. So we don't exactly know what the deal is, but obviously that's going to, I think, come out in the next couple of weeks that Shane maybe is the, like the new Linda McMahon when she used to come out. He's actually behind the scenes pulling some strings, doing some things. And, you know, the NXT thing that Dustin brought up, I wouldn't be surprised that maybe he's, you know, in control of talent relations or something. He's got some big role that Stephanie had no idea about. But when you're married to the COO, you're one of the presidents of the company and one of the principal owners, you got to know that stuff. So that's really not believable to me. Either way, I like the McMahon thing because the McMahon family controversy is always good. It's always good to have McMahon family controversy. But again, who knows? But here we are at 10:30 right now. Divas are on. This match will probably last another 10 minutes. And we don't have any main event guys coming on. I mean, I'm sick of the League of Nations. They're going to end off the night with Roman Reigns. They just made that announcement. Stephanie made the announcement while we were talking to Peyton Manning regarding it's going to be Sheamus versus Roman Reigns. Another snooze button I could hit here for the main event tonight. So unless Shane comes out and does something again, it's to me, nah. I'm sick of Roman Reigns. I think they've mismanaged Roman Reigns to a point where if he does anything now, people aren't going to like him. Yeah, he's a face, but he's not a face in the sense of the crowd being behind him. He's a face in the sense of he's the good guy. Speaking of faces, and we'll get into this, faces and heels and the difference a little bit later on in the show. We're talking about mic workers right now. And the reason why I want to bring up the mic worker thing, and I'm going to lead in with a little bit of this and tell me – You don't agree with me here.
At SummerSlam, I'm going to show you and I'm going to show the world I am the game.
And that clip actually ends a little bit too soon. After that, he says, and I am that damn good. On the WWE Network, $9.99 a month, you can go on and check. They've updated everything. You can watch Raw replays from all the years. So you can watch Raw from 90, you know, actually, I think this all the way back to 83, all the way through last week. So I've been going on, I've been watching, I'm about midway through 2000 right now, bringing back memories of my childhood. And I got to say, the mic work back then, so much better. Everybody could talk back then. And, you know, it was only a two-hour show, but sometimes the segments went a little long, but everybody could talk. So we're going to talk about, and feel free to go in the comment box and chat to us, send us an email, or even call in if you want to. 713-955-0359. Call in and let us know your top five mic workers. And I say this just as Charlotte gets on the mic, and quite frankly, Charlotte has the personality of a dry piece of wood, so I don't really want her on the microphone. But hey, she's good to look at, and it's always nice to see Ric Flair, so whatever. But top five mic workers, Jason, I'm going to let you go first. Who do you feel, and this is encompassing, I know you're a little bit older than I am, but who in all of your time watching wrestling has really just given you those goosebumps on the microphone?
Oh, man, this is so many. I would definitely say Paul Heyman's by far the best. I mean, I follow Paul Heyman from his ECW, from his WCW, his WWF runs, his WWE runs. Definitely Paul Heyman's my number one guy. Number two was a toss-up between Bobby the Brain Heenan and Triple H. Triple H, like we talk about heels and faces, Triple H made you hate him. I mean, like you said earlier, back in the early Attitude era, you did not like Triple H, unless you was a natural heel guy. You didn't care for Triple H.
I as a kid, to be honest with you, I'm dating myself here. I was born in '88, so in 2000, I was in seventh grade. So I was, you know, I was a young gun at the time, and I hated Triple H. Now, he was the main guy. I didn't hate him in the sense of, like, I hate Roman Reigns in this sense, but Triple H made you dislike him. He made you root against him, and that's what you got to do as a heel. I mean, I respect him. It was a love-hate thing for me. I loved to root against Triple H, put it that way, and he did most of that work on the microphone. But anyway, continue. So you got Paul Heyman, Triple H.
But one thing about Triple H, just think about when when Randy Orton was the World Heavyweight Champion and how quickly and how disgusted he was when he turned on him when they jumped him out of Evolution. But not just then, but when he was a good guy and he brought it back up in Randy's face when Randy was leading Legacy. He was like, you know, I never liked you. I'm not a good... Even when he was a good guy, he was giving you hints that, hey, I'm not a good guy. So you can't beat mic work like that. I was, Triple H is definitely top three all time when it comes to on the mic. Number
and, you
three,
know, I wish I had the clips, but Triple H has had watching those year 2000 McMahon-Helmley regime moments. Triple H, yeah, he'd have these long promos where he would talk about literally nothing. He used to have that whole thing, and he'd come out and he'd start every show, and they would do everything, and he'd start yelling into the mic and getting intense. But yeah, Triple H was a genius on the microphone, and a lot of it is a lot of people don't know this, but a lot of those McMahon-Helmsley regime promos were unscripted. Triple H just went out and did that. I mean, he had an agenda. I mean, they told him, you're going to go out and make this match, you're going to go out and say this. But he a lot of that was off the dome, and that was beautiful. Anyway, so we got Triple H, we got Heyman. Who's the next three for you?
I'm going to go Bobby the Brain Heenan. That's old school, I know, but Brain was definitely in his heyday. The Heenan family, he was great on the mic. I mean, literally, he convinced Andre the Giant to turn on Hulk Hogan. I mean, back then, that was a big deal back in the early WrestleMania days. Number four, I'm going to go with CM Punk. Now, before CM Punk did his little pipe bomb, you did not like CM Punk. He was a heel. He was that straight edge, you know, I'm better than you kind of guy. And throughout the years, his mic skills got better. But even before the pipe bomb, he was still a great workhorse on the mic. And number five.
CM Punk's a good one.
And number five, I'm going to go with Edge. Edge, when he was a heel, oh my God, there was no stopping Edge on the mic. He was arguably he was the best. Him and Cena was the best rivalry from that post Attitude Era.
I don't know about that.
You don't know about that? Okay, that's for a debate another day.
This is the inaugural show. We didn't really know what we were going to do topic-wise. I think that this is a topic that we should talk about a little bit more in depth next week. We're going to name our top five right now, but we're going to talk a little bit more about this in depth because I'll have clips and I'll have examples and things to prove my point because by the time I upload them now, you know, the show's going to be over. So we'll get all that cut and I'll get all the right clips cut and all that for next week. And I think that we'll promote this a little bit, and we'll go into this a little bit more in detail. But when you say the Attitude Era, Edge was at the tail end of the Attitude Era. I mean, Edge's main career in terms of what a lot of people nowadays are going to remember, it was still WWE. He only did a little bit when there was still the F logo, and that was when he was with Edge and Christian when they had the tag team, and, you know, for the benefit of those with Flash Photography, and they used to do that, you know. But in terms of him being the real heel, a lot of that came in the mid to late 2000s. For me, the top five has got to be, and I'm surprised you left him out of there, has got to be The Rock, number one. I mean, watching what The Rock used to do on the microphone, even back when he was in the corporation and he was corny, okay, he was just – that's why the crowd loved him so much, because of his catchphrases and his, you know, he would pause at the perfect time and just the way that he said things. The Rock was arguably the best talker, superstar anyway. We're not talking about managers like Heyman. Arguably the best talker of all time, and a lot of his catchphrases are still being used. Another one, obviously, we're going to go back to the Attitude Era here, is Stone Cold Steve Austin. Now, I know Stone Cold was... You know, he was a Southern redneck, and a lot of the things he said were repeats, you know, but he had his catchphrase. He had his, you know, and that's the bottom line, Stone Cold said so. He used to have the oh, hell yeah thing. He used to have this and that. But then he had the what thing back when he was the heel. The crowd still chants what every once in a while. So that was something I think that Stone Cold was instrumental on the microphone for the two Attitude Era guys. Then I'm going to put Paul Heyman, because Paul Heyman, to me, being an athlete my whole life, I would love to have Paul Heyman in the locker room. I mean, if there's anybody that can pump you up, it's Paul Heyman. I'm sitting on my couch and I want to jump through the TV and just be like, yeah, oh, you know, Paul Heyman is just, he pumps me up. So that's obviously right. For my three here. I'm going to say Vince McMahon, Because for those of you, now you look at Vince McMahon, and Dustin had mentioned, you know, the bad health that he looks like he's in. I'm not talking about nowadays Vince McMahon. I'm talking about Attitude Era Vince McMahon, when he used to be on the mic and some of the things he used to say. He was very instrumental in a lot of the things that had happened. Shane McMahon as well, but I'm going to tie those two in, Shane and Vince. And then, obviously, I'm going to say Triple H, simply because Triple H, like we talked about a minute ago, was the, you know, the heel. I want to say, based on my lifetime of watching, has been the ultimate heel. There's not going to be a heel, based on what I've seen personally in my life, better than Triple H. Now, obviously, some people who are older than me will say that there are other good, you know, good heels and things in the earlier stages. But to me, what I've seen personally, Triple H is the best heel that I've ever seen back when he was in his prime. Another, I guess, honorable mention on the microphone, Macho Man Randy Savage. I have a couple of those clips for next week. I also have Hulk Hogan on there for back in the day, and that's even in WCW. So he's had several things. Paul Bearer was good on the mic back when he was introducing Kane.
That's true.
But again, my top five, we've mentioned. Both mentioned our top five. CM Punk is there. For right now, he's got to be honorable mention to me because he had such a short career that he's got to be honorable mention to me. But yeah, those are my top five for right now. But again, we're going to get into this a little bit next week. So if y'all are listening, stay tuned next week right here at 10 o'clock. And we're going to get in a little bit in depth as to why. We have our top five, but we're going to say why. We might even extend it to top 10 next week, but we're going to promote that Sunday on Satellite Sundays. And we're going to promote it all week on the website overtime.news. So check that out. And speaking of microphone, I know it's not the same microphone, but it's very similar. And this is what I want to lead into with this.
What the hell is this? What the hell is this? It's a new champion! That's so ready! That's so ready! And new World Wrestling Federation champion, Stone Cold Steve Austin! What the hell is this? Austin, face to face with McMahon!
I played those two clips, and this is a passionate topic for me. Might piss some people off, but it also some people might agree with me. Jim Ross, good old JR, who I'm surprised didn't have a heart attack for a lot of the time during the Attitude Era. He was a little overweight. I'm surprised the way he could make things exciting, the way that he could, as you just heard those two clips, and those are two minor examples, but for the way that he was able to just give you those goosebumps. Like, to me as a kid, on Monday, I didn't care about school. School was me going through the motions so that I could get home and watch Raw and listen to JR scream for 2 hours. Because to me, JR could make opening a guy opening a Ziploc bag interesting. Okay, by God, he's going to eat that sandwich. Don't do it. That sandwich has a family. You know what I'm saying? Like he could give it goosebumps. To me, Michael Cole, meh. Michael Cole is always, to me, going to be the pretty boy announcer, the pretty boy, the backstage interviewer. He's always going to be the guy who wasn't quite good enough. He was always the SmackDown guy. They put him on their secondary show at the time. And, you know, JBL, yeah, okay, maybe JBL. He's more of a gimmick. And this new Byron Saxton, okay, whatever. He's a modern-day coach, big deal. But JR, to me, and for those of you who don't know what I do, obviously, I work in play-by-play now as well. I do play-by-play for football, basketball, things like that. JR is what got me to go into my journalism career. JR is the one who got me to go into play-by-play. He's the one who was really my inspiration to, you know, go get my broadcast journalism degree, to go to the Connecticut School of Broadcasting, and to, you know, to get my play-by-play certificate, because he is arguably, and I'm gonna play some more of his clips later on or next week. JR, to me, I think, and this is a bold statement, Jason, you could disagree with me here, but JR is what made the Attitude Era. Not necessarily Stone Cold, not necessarily The Rock. I think if Stone Cold and The Rock were with this announced team, it may not have been nearly as exciting, quite frankly. I mean, when Austin drove that Zamboni in, and just the whole Austin's got McMahon, that whole thing that he did, that to me, that moment still resonates in my head. And I think Michael Cole would have been like, oh, good gosh, it's Stone Cold. What is he going to do next? He jumped on top of McMahon. Oh, God. You know, it doesn't work for me. I don't know about you. I know JR is not in good enough health, and I know that he hasn't had the best relationship with them recently, so that's why he's not doing it now. But to me, I can't watch. And I will let you get into this, but I'm just saying, when JR went out with his Bell's palsy, give you an example, I'm watching this those WWE Raw replays, and when he was out with Bell's palsy in the beginning of 1999, mm-hmm. I skipped through it. I just read the results. I just went on and said, okay, well, what happened on this show? What happened on this show? What happened on this show? Finally, I read when he came back, and then I started watching. Because I didn't want to hear Michael Cole and Jerry the King Lawler. I wanted to hear JR. JR, to me, was the reason why I stayed up late on school nights to watch WWE. And I don't know if it was the same for you.
Oh, it definitely was. And I have to agree with you, because, I mean, the commentating now is just so terrible. I mean, they put the king on SmackDown. I mean, why? Michael Cole's terrible. He's a JR wannabe. And
well, they put
King
on SmackDown, I think, to boost the show up. Because right now, SmackDown, I don't watch. I don't even care about SmackDown. Nothing happens on SmackDown. So that's why
SmackDown,
I don't care. They wanted to try to put him on to try to bring the program up. But even King can't do it.
The only way to save SmackDown is to put SmackDown live. And they refuse to do it. They refuse to put it on Tuesday nights live. I don't know. That makes no sense to me. But, yeah, back to the commentary.
It's never been.
Yeah,
live,
true.
But either way.
But everybody knows this. Yeah, everybody knows it's taped on Tuesday. But I don't know why they didn't want to switch that up. But yeah, I mean, the commentating now. I mean, you're right. If we put Michael Cole in the Attitude Era, he would have stinked up the joint. JR would have probably, if he was in great health now, he would spicing things up. Like, he would be out here so anti-authority. It would have been great. Now it's like, the authority run show. The authority pretty much run the commentating. I mean, JBL is just god awful. I mean, I don't know how do we fix this problem now.
I don't think it is fixable at this point. I mean, I really feel like at this point, JR is always going to sort of be that stepping stone. And I think for a lot of people who grew up in the Attitude Era, he's always this what they have now is never going to be the same unless they find somebody who's similar in style, but they don't want that. They don't want Attitude Era. They don't want any of that. They trust me, if it was quote unquote best for business to have JR, they would have JR still. Trust me, they would. But they don't feel like it is. They feel like they want to go in a different direction, which is perfectly fine. It's their company. They can do what they want. But to me, I think even nowadays, even with the lackluster talent that they have nowadays, I think JR can make it sound interesting.
I agree.
So,
but you know what makes me wonder, like, what if JR was in good health? Do you think he would have stuck around? Do you think he would have, you know, with everything going on, the whole kiddie thing, it being a PG era, you think he would have stuck around? I don't know if he would have.
Yeah, because they were getting to that a little bit in the late 2000s, 2006, 2007. And he was still commentating. I think, yeah, maybe nowadays he wouldn't with the direction that the company's going in. But I feel like he would make all of this interesting. He would, like you said, he would be very anti-authority. He'd be very anti-everything. I'm going to play this off my phone because I tried to upload it and the clip isn't working. So here's the clip that today still gives me goosebumps. And again, I do apologize, audio quality. I'm trying to upload it, but while you're on the air, it's always tough to upload. So I'll have this one for next week. But this is the one that today still gives me goosebumps.
Oh,
So basically, again, I do apologize for the audio quality, but again, that is something that I wasn't planning on putting this segment in the beginning of the show. So that is why I didn't have the clip ready, and I tried to upload it and it wasn't working. So, but just that particular thing makes it sound like, as a kid, I was jumping through the roof when that happened. And I think that if you watch that same thing on mute, nothing happens. Yeah, okay, yeah, some bald guy's coming in and kicking a bunch of people around the ring. Big deal. But it was JR's reaction to pretty much everything. You know, when he called Paul Bearer a rotund demon. You know, when he used to call Vince McMahon, you know, the devil himself in the clip that we played earlier. He doesn't play around. Everything was so serious to him. A lot of the Mick Foley things and you know, when Triple H was battling against Cactus Jack for the career match and those things, he made it emotional for you. He made you invested in the match. The way that he was able to do what he did made you like characters more, made you hate characters more. And like, just to give you an example, Jason, and I'm not saying this, I want you to be completely, completely unbiased here when I ask you this.
Run! Triple H standing guard! Oh, my God! Triple H just hit Austin with a face to the sledgehammer! What the hell is that? All of Stone Cold have been destroyed! Have been left battered and bloody and hammered at the hands of the game and the sledgehammer!
So you hear that, tell me that you don't feel a certain way about Triple H hearing that.
Oh, absolutely. Like I said, JR was the best at getting heels over. And like we said earlier, Triple H was definitely top three heel of all time. He would do things, he would say things, and then again you had JR backing him up on commentating to even further express the it was great. It was a great era. I miss those days. Just listening to that clip brought back so much memories.
It was. And, you know, we're going to have more on this next week as well, because I definitely have some more clips that I want to play for you, not off my phone, but actually play for you here in the studio. But, yeah, I definitely, definitely want to go into this. So now we've got two topics that we're going to elaborate on next week. But, Jason, let me ask you, though, for JR, when some of the moments, you tell me, what are some of your favorite moments in the old school WWE? Because we're watching this Roman Reigns Sheamus match and I'm ready to fall asleep. So you tell me, what are some of your best moments? Let's say, I know you're a little older than me, let's say 97 through 06, let's say.
Best moment of all time is definitely when Cactus Jack or Nick Foley fell off the top of the Hell in a Cell. Between
through the ring,
the commentating, that was the first time we saw anything like that. It was just great. Also, I don't know if you remember the time on Monday Night Raw where Shawn Michaels, he super kicked Sweet Chin Music, Shelton Benjamin, as he was flying through the air. That was one of the first times we ever seen that. And then JR perfectly said, "Good God Almighty." Like, you just don't get better than that. I mean,
No. That one, and when Undertaker came back at Judgment Day in 2000, and then the next night on Raw when he comes out and King's like, "Where's he going?" You know, because King had that high pitched like woo that voice. He's like, "Where's he going?" Right. And JR's like, "Wherever he wants to go, by God." You know, that whole thing was just to me, it made me as a kid. It was a staple of my childhood, and to me, I gotta say, and this is gonna sound asinine, I didn't even really like the wrestling aspect that much. I watched it for JR. That's why I watched it. And you can call me an idiot, you can call me whatever. I know Dustin's a little bit thinks a certain way about it, but I watched it for JR. And some of the storylines I don't think would have been pulled off the way that they were pulled off without him freaking out the way that he did. I mean, one of the moments for me. You mentioned Mick Foley going off the top of the cage, and you know, and obviously JR was biased in it, rooting for Mick, you know, saying, "Oh, kick out Mick, damn it, kick out," you know, that whole thing. yeah, JR was very anti-establishment, anti-McMahon, anti any of that. And, you know, he rooted for the faces. But I think part of the reason The Rock and Stone Cold grew to the popularity that they grew to was because of how JR pushed them on the air, too. Because he took their side, you know?
Absolutely.
And same thing with Triple H. But I think it was also instrumental because the way JR sounded, he hated Triple H, also gave Triple H that push. Also made people say, man, you know, this guy is just, you know, I can't stand him. But so I think JR was perfect in making the WWF what they were back then. And I think, to be honest with you, and again, this is going to be an asinine statement for a lot of people, and I think a lot of people are going to write us emails and things to comment about this, but I think part of the reason, and I'm not even saying talent-wise, because WCW had an assload of talent too. They had, you know, Diamond Dallas Page, Hulk Hogan at the time, NWO, the Wolfpack, Ric Flair was still there at the time, Sting, Booker T. This was before Booker T came in even. Mm-hmm. I mean, they had a whole bunch of talent over there. But if you watch, yes, both companies sold out arenas. Both companies had fans packed to the rafters. But neither company could argue that the commentating was up to what JR was. WWF will tell you the reason why. You watch the ratings. WWF would constantly get 5.6, 6.2, 6.1, whatever. WCW was getting in the threes, okay, because they just didn't have anybody to pump their characters the way. Now, I'm not dissing their
They had Tony Schiavone. He was above.
And The Brain and Heenan, I think, right?
Yeah, Heenan. Heenan was already past his prime at that point.
Well, sure.
And he wasn't.
Yes.
And he wasn't working with much over there in terms of, like, to get that reaction out of him. The only time was hilarious over there is when he was like, I told you I'd never liked that Hulk Hogan guy. I told you when Hogan turned bad. That was the only time Heenan was worth listening to back then. But, yeah, JR.
When Goldberg was doing his thing. When Goldberg was undefeated and used to walk through the pyro, and he used to come out from the back, and the whole crowd was chanting Goldberg, and he used to walk from the locker room out into the thing. And imagine if JR would have called that, because a lot of people nowadays, you're going to see Stone Cold lunchboxes, you're going to see The Rock lunchboxes, you're going to see Undertaker stuff, you're going to see this and that. How often do you see somebody wearing a Goldberg t-shirt? Okay, and I think the only reason you see anybody wearing Hulkamania stuff is because he started in the WWF and you know, he's just so big and so instrumental. But people forget, like, people know Booker T. They don't know Harlem Heat. They don't know him and Stevie, his brother. They don't know any of that. They know Booker T in the Alliance, and then they know Booker T as he was in WWF or WWE when he came in. So, you know, I just think that JR was the one that got the ratings. I think people, because if you watch, and facts will tell you this, when JR was out in the beginning of 99, that was the only time throughout that Attitude Era that WCW had better TV ratings, because people were tuning in to watch JR, and without JR, they switched channels.
So true.
Yeah, and so let me ask you then, if Michael Cole got such low ratings back then when they were in their prime, why have him now?
So true. They have no other choice. There's no one else. They didn't really groom. They didn't groom anybody else. Taz left early, and I think Coach would have been a great fill-in, but ESPN scooped him up.
True. Well, Coach, so, I think Coach was more talented. I understand him going to ESPN. Oh, wait a minute. Now, what is this? Triple H is coming out. Okay. No. Again, we are doing a live Raw recap here. We're at the final stages of Raw, doing a snooze fest main event, Sheamus versus Roman Reigns. And, oh, there's Triple H coming out with his jeans and his leather jacket, Attitude Era throwback.
Okay.
And he's got the belt.
Okay.
He's got the belt. I don't really care either, but see, I can't get over Triple H with short hair. He just doesn't look like Triple H.
Yeah. Yeah. Looks like a lumberjack man now.
Yeah. He's still huge though.
He's still huge, yeah.
He's a monster still, but he's still spitting the water. I love that. But, you know, okay, I understand this is what you got to do. You got to have the whole pump up for WrestleMania and this and that. Sure, I understand. But I can't – this type of thing – now, let me ask you this now, Jason. You saw last night Fastlane, one of the worst pay-per-views in the past couple of years.
Definitely.
Oh, wait, look at this. As Triple H and Roman Reigns are going at it. Beautiful. Well, okay, this is nice to see. I like to see a little bit of diversity here with Triple H actually wrestling, getting out of the suit. I like to see that. Let me ask you, Fastlane, obviously Dean Ambrose attacked both Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar with the chair. Do you think that because you mentioned Coach going to ESPN, the whole concussion protocol thing and the caution that the NFL is doing right now, do you feel that perhaps you're not allowed to hit people in the head with a chair and you're not allowed to be as violent and vicious? Like even at Extreme Rules pay-per-view, even in the hardcore street fight, like this hardcore street fight that Brock Lesnar and Dean Ambrose are going to be in is not going to anywhere. It's going to pale in comparison to anything from back in that day. Do you feel like you should still be able to that technology is good enough nowadays that you should still be able to hit him in the head and that these guys should be able to to work it in a way where they can still look like they're hitting them in the head but not actually making hard enough contact to injure them?
I think there's ways to work it, but I do think Brock and Dean will push the envelope. They will go as far as they can go without crossing the line. They will be habitual line steppers come WrestleMania. And the way Brock is so over, like look what Triple H just did there. When's the last time we seen someone get hit? When's the last time we seen that? Triple H should get away with that because he's up there. He's untouched. He's Teflon. He's untouchable.
I think Triple H was a staple of the Attitude Era, yeah. So.
Exactly, and I think Brock is going to be somewhere like that where he might tell Dean, like, hey, give me your best shot. I don't care if we bleed. So they're going to push the envelope, but I do miss the days where you saw headshots and, you know, you saw blood. It made it look semi-real. Now it's like it's just unbearable. But I'm glad to see what Triple H – yeah, but I'm glad to see what Triple H just did.
I enjoy it. And you know, when they put Lesnar through the table last night twice – that brought back some good memories. And this, what he's doing right now, brings back some good memories for me. I like violence, personally. I like that kind of thing. I like blood. I like all that. Even Hell in a Cell matches lately have been weak in comparison.
Yeah.
I mean, this Shane Undertaker thing is not going to anywhere be close to, obviously, the Mankind Undertaker, to the, you know, the one you pointed out there, the Cactus Jack Triple H in the Hell in the Cell. It's not going to be anywhere close to those. In fact, it's not even going to be close to the Edge Undertaker Hell in the Cell at SummerSlam. It's not even going to be close to that. There's some blood.
There's some blood. There we go.
We have blood. There will be blood. Look at, now he's blood. Okay, I enjoy this. I like blood. And let me tell you this now. You remember back, this was, I think around this time last year, actually, when they put Dean Ambrose, I believe it was Dean Ambrose's head that they had put through it. It could have been Reigns, but again, I was sort of half checked out. But when they put his head on the cinder blocks and then he did that curb stomp.
Yeah.
Awesome. Awesome. I mean, that to me was, I was like, yeah, Attitude Era is back. That's awesome. And you know, even this brings me back to my point. Are you listening to commentary right now too? I have one headphone off and I'm listening to these guys. Not exciting to me. I could picture JR freaking out right now. JR is like, good God, the game. You know, he's taking it to Roman Reigns. Roman Reigns has been busted open. You know, the whole thing. And just making it seem like it was a lot more dramatic than it is. Oh, here comes the ring steps. Don't do it. Don't do it, game. You know, that whole thing. I could just – they're not saying anything. I mean, I could commentate this. I could put this on mute and commentate for the next 25 minutes we have in the show. I could commentate this and do better than what they're doing right now. Is he going to pedigree him on the steps? Oh, he's going to pedigree him on the steps.
Look at it. Look at it. Yes,
I want him to do
it.
F Roman Reigns. Do it. Do it, Hunter. Yes. Yes. Okay, that made my night. Do it. Good Lord, he just pedigreed him on the steel steps. Somebody stop this.
He had that coming. I mean, he had it coming.
He did have it coming, and you know, this is good because if Triple H is going to start doing this kind of stuff, DX throwback. All right. See, I like that. That to me, that just made this Raw one of my top five in the last year. And that to me was amazing because there's blood, there's violence, there's gore. The only thing we're missing is some, you know, 60-year-old man having an aneurysm on the mic. That's the only thing we're missing.
Wow. And they did all of this and only under 11:05 and not really going that much over. Very impressive.
I hate when they go to like 11:15, you know, because they don't, it doesn't, but okay, I'm going to stop and save that because my roommate's going to want to watch it later. But, you know, I don't know if you have Colony on down there, but Colony's on next.
Now
we're going to mention, I've never watched it, but the previews didn't look that great. Let me ask you this. Oh, Shark Tank. Let me ask you this then. Okay, we're talking about Triple H being the ultimate heel, and I think that WWE just did us a favor segueing into this. We're talking about the ultimate heel character. Right now, there are no true heels in this business. There are no true guys like we mentioned Triple H, who you just hated back in 99, 2000, 2001, he just made your skin crawl. Okay, back when I'm trying to think of a Big Boss Man, back when he was the corporate hitman in 99, just you were like, oh, Boss Man, I hate him. You know, Vince McMahon was the ultimate heel, you know, and right. Now Triple H, who's supposed to be the bad guy in this whole thing, who's supposed to be the authority figure that gets booed when they come out to talk, he just got cheered for pedigreeing your top face onto the steel steps and bloodying him up. Did you see that? Did you see them cheering Triple H for that?
I saw it, yeah.
So
it's amazing.
You're not supposed to cheer the heel, you know?
Hey, what are you going to do when the face is that bad? What are you going to do when the faces are terrible? You have to cheer somebody.
Yeah, or you have to reevaluate your talent. I mean, you look at NXT, and I know you're a big NXT guy.
Oh,
Bringing a guy like a Sami Zayn or a Finn Balor, somebody like that, spiced it up a little bit.
But you know what? I wouldn't be surprised what Dustin alluded to earlier. We might have like brand warfare. Like we know NXT is Triple H and Stephanie's pet project. Maybe Shane does get control of Raw, and then we see the Finn Balor. We've seen that Balor Club that's been advertised for a couple of months now debut the night after WrestleMania. We might see that.
You could, or you could see it at WrestleMania.
Another
thing I was thinking, we talked about SmackDown being sort of the lesser show right now. Do you think they could possibly try to save SmackDown? Because you said the only way to save it would be would be going live. I don't necessarily agree with that. Do you think that they could maybe save SmackDown by having the draft again? Remember when they did the WWE draft?
I was going to say the draft might work, but with the with all the injuries, that's the problem. Like wrestlers were not getting injured the way they are now. I mean, just think about it. Like, how many people out? Cena, Cesaro, Rollins. I mean, I don't know if a draft would work now.
It may because you have to pump it the right way. It's all about marketing. But, you know, that's another interesting point. We'll get back to the draft in a second and the possibility of it in a second. Let me ask you this then. During the Attitude Era, how can Mick Foley take the punishment that he took and you know, all of those superstars taking the chair shots and the sledgehammer shots and the, you know, Mae Young at 80 years old getting powerbombed off the stage through a table by Bubba Ray Dudley at 80 years old. How can these guys and girls take the punishment that they took that looked so real, okay, and be back the next night? You know, I mean, Mick Foley was on Raw the next night. In fact, after he got thrown off the top of the cage by the Undertaker, he came out in the next match, in the Stone Cold match, and interfered in that match in the First Blood thing at King of the Ring. These guys are able to take this punishment and keep going. Nowadays, you see a minute fraction of the same kind of violence, and guys are dropping like flies.
Yep.
Do you think that it's possibly because they're going more athletic, and possibly these guys are getting more, orthopedic injuries, like what Seth Rollins got, maybe because they're trying to go more athletic with it, guys' knees and ankles and arms and stuff are giving out more than perhaps a less athletic talent as there was back then, but just more violence? Do you think that's the case?
I think it's a combination of both. And you also got to remember, a lot of these guys, the Rollins, the Ambrose, the, you know, Daniel Bryan, a lot of them spent so many years in, you know, in the indie circuit before they got their main roster spot. So, you know, all those injuries take a toll, because, like, I think, how old is Seth Rollins? Like, 34?
Something like that,
you
yeah.
You would think he's younger, but, you know, he's been in the indies for a long time. So all those moves, you know, wear and tear from back then, coming to the mainstream now and still kind of being... Because you remember, back in the days, a heel wasn't so aerial as Seth Rollins or CM Punk.
Oh, no, of course, no, no.
So they weren't doing...
Well, a heel was Triple H, and a heel
exactly.
was always bigger, intimidating. You know, he was always... Rollins, I just got some input here, is that he is 29. So he's actually younger than we thought.
Okay, anyways,
I don't have Google in front of me right now. I wish I did, but in the studio I don't have that. Do you perhaps feel that maybe this more athletic thing is leading to some of these injuries? Because, you know, hitting people in the head with chairs and things like that, okay, yeah, that's great. But then part of me thinks, how the hell can you get thrown 15 feet off of steel through a table and not get injured? And, you know, I know Mick is still, you know, he did get injured technically, but he never missed a night of action. And I just don't understand why now these guys are going down. Is it because maybe they're not roiding the way that they were and they're not quite as strong? I don't know.
And then you also got to remember, now they have more shows, there's more house shows, you know, Raws, and then SmackDown's taped the next night. You know, the roster's thin. It's not like before we had a brand split where you had people working certain shows. So it's definitely a lot of factors to take into place.
So, yes, I got Seth Rollins up here. Seth Rollins is 29. He was born in 1986, so he's younger than we thought. And then, again, think about it. You mentioned him being in the indies. Excuse me. You mentioned him being in the indies. The Shield was around for about 2 years. before he really became in the prominence. And Dean Ambrose was the leader of the Shield. So real quick, we're going to bring our studio guy here, Dustin, back in for this topic. We got 15 minutes left to go, and I do promise you next week we'll actually have audio clips. This was the inaugural broadcast. We wanted to test out how finishing out the end of Raw was going to work. Obviously, it is good to have some topics and things like that. So we will tie some more stuff in next week. We've already got the mic workers, and we've already got the heel commentators and the heel thing for next week. But again, stay tuned. 90 minutes every Monday during Raw. Dustin wants to come back in because we know that Dustin, who was an HBK guy, is also a big Seth Rollins guy, which I don't like Seth Rollins personally, but Dustin does. So, Dustin, you wanted to comment on this. You just sent me a production message. What's up?
So – the thing I wanted to comment on was the injury plague, so to speak. So Jason said he watched that podcast with Brock on there. And part of that podcast, Brock talked about when he tried to do that. You remember the reverse? It was like the reverse 540 splash, the old 7-year itch move that Billy Kidman did. And he tried doing it and he landed on his neck. You remember that?
Yeah, I remember that.
So that was back when ECW was invading, and that was when Brock was really young. And he flat out said, you know, because Austin's like, why the hell did you do that? And he's like, I was dumb and I was stupid. I was young, and I thought I had to prove myself, and I didn't pick my spots. And he goes, well, yeah. He's like, well, what do you – he's like, elaborate for our listeners. And he went on to describe, I'm a powerful guy. Why in the world am I jumping off the top rope, right? Because you'll never see Brock Lesnar do another off the top rope move because the risk versus reward is not there for him. He felt he needed to prove himself back in the day, but now he doesn't, right? Because he's already getting paid top dollars. He's a once in a while show up guy. When was the last time you saw Taker go off the top rope if it wasn't his weird little, I'm going to hold your hand and walk? And now he doesn't even do it anymore because he probably doesn't have the coordination. When he used to walk, across the rope and do the jump,
the snake eyes move, yeah,
and that's that to me. That is Triple H. How often do we see him go off the top rope? The smaller guys have.
Well, he's never been a top rope.
Make up, right? But for good reason. Triple H was young at one point. He could have gone that route, but no, he bulked up. and said, I'm going to be power and I'm going to stay low to the ground. The smaller guys have to do the athletic stuff to get noticed. I'm telling you, when I was on the fence with Rollins, was right at the beginning of his title reign, right? I was like, just like you, Chris, I couldn't stand the whiny, you know, stuff he was doing, and I wasn't digging his mic skills. And then he shows up. First pay-per-view I saw, one of his first, he shows up in this all-white leather, like, HBK jumpsuit, and I was like, that's fucking awesome. Because you don't see guys doing that anymore. You don't see anybody showing up in, like, all, like, you know, like, professionally done matching attire, like, vest, tights, like, the big HBK, Texas boots, gloves. I'm like, all right, that's cool. I missed that look. I'm bored with the Randy Orton, you know, just showing up in his underwear. I'm bored with Cena trying to look like he's a wigger. I hate all that.
He hasn't done that in a while. But
I like the – who hasn't done that in a while?
Well, Cena doesn't do the whole rap thing anymore.
He wears baggy jeans. Are you kidding me?
Okay, but that's his.
Oh my God,
yeah, but he's not doing the whole rap thing with the chains
anymore.
Just because
he dropped the big chain in his dummy, like, flat-brimmed hat doesn't mean he still has a terrible, terrible character. But anyways, don't get me started on Cena. I'll take up the last 13 minutes of the show. But Rollins came out. He's got the white jumpsuit, and all of a sudden he starts doing, like, like Japanese stunts. Top rope. He did like this spinning 540 flip splash, and I'm like, holy shit. Like, I was watching the match and I was excited. Every other match I fast forward because I know the match standard is 20 minutes. So I fast forward through 15 minutes. I play. I see where the match is at. Are they out? Are they outside the ring? Is this the time where they would normally go to a commercial break and bring us back for that second half? I'm like, and then if I get the idea that the match might be close to the end, I'll stick. But usually on pay-per-views, it's 30 minutes. So I keep fast-forwarding, and then I get to maybe the first finishing maneuver, because now we're in an era where one finish doesn't put you away, and you want to talk about a watered-down product. Like, if you ever told me you get a stunner and you kick out, I'd shit my pants. Like, why are we doing that? Why does a guy need 3 F5s to get pinned? Why does a guy need 3 tombstones to get pinned? How many Sweet Chin Music do you need? How many pedigrees? That's another problem with this freaking stupid-ass era. But my whole thing was, is Rollins did some of the craziest off-the-top rope things I had seen since Jeff Hardy. And he's built like a heavyweight. He's just 6'1". He's a little short, but he's a built dude. He's in good shape for his size. So he's the second coming physically of HBK. A little bit better because he's a little bit more evolved off the top rope. But to your point, Chris, he has to do it because he can't hold a candle. What, you're gonna put him in a match with that Strowman dude? How are you gonna make that believable?
Let me ask you then. For that whole, you know, what they have to do kind of a thing with Rollins and all that. You know, is it sort of this whole athleticism thing that they're doing now? Like, is it because you look at a lot of these guys, you're talking about power versus whatever. Chris Benoit, when he came over to WWE, he was that technical guy, but he was a big, bulky whoever. But his finisher, besides the submission move, was that flying headbutt off the top rope. And he was a big, known as more of a power guy. And even back in the day, some of those power guys used to do
some rope stuff. He wasn't tall, though. That's the thing. You can be a power guy, but if you're not 6'3 or 6'4, it's not power. You're not believable. The guy, they booked Big Show at 7 feet. He's barely 6'6. Yeah, I thought, you know what I mean? Like, I thought Undertaker and Kane were 7-footers. No, they're not. Yeah. Put them next to a 7-footer and they look like a 6-foot tall guy. You're like, what the hell? They're like, if he's 7 feet, what the hell are you? So that's the point, is they book these guys at different weights than they really are. But if you Wikipedia any of them, if you Google any of them, you get their true weight and their height, and it's a little off, you know, at best. So I just think for these big guys, a Ryback, for example, perfect example of a power guy, right? The Ron Strowman type. How in the world can you make Seth Rollins versus Strowman a believable match? The only way is the HBK way. Back when HBK went against Vader, HBK went against Yokozuna, HBK went against
The Undertaker.
But even Undertaker in his prime to me wasn't as threatening as Vader and Diesel. But that's just me.
True. Well, Vader was a jobber. I think what they did to Vader was terrible.
Yeah, okay. He was a jobber, but my point is the size, the pure size and power, right? There's a little bit of believability that goes into wrestling. I need to believe it, otherwise I'm not interested, right? How in the world is Dean Ambrose going to beat Brock Lesnar? With a chair, with a sledgehammer, with weapons. I believe it. If it was just a straight match, it'd be a waste of my time. But I'll watch it because I get to watch a little guy with a fighting chance use as many weapons as possible to knock this dude out. However,
but you can't hit him in the head. You can't really do anything anymore, though.
Yeah, but that doesn't matter. It's still how they react to the getting shot in the stomach. A sledgehammer to the ribs is going to be just as effective as a sledgehammer to the head. It doesn't matter. They're going to sell them both equally now. But my point is, HBK, when he fought against Diesel, everyone's like, this guy's done. But he came out, he was vicious. He came out off the top rope. He was pulling everything out of his arsenal. So when he finally barely stretched to hit that Sweet Chin Music, you believed it. You bought it. David conquered Goliath, right? So Rollins could only fight Strowman in the same way. He'd have to do off the top rope shit. He'd have to use his speed. He'd have to outrun him, go after his knees, kick him out onto the ground. And, you know, a million off the top rope moves. There's no chance standing in front of each other that Rollins and Strowman is a fight. And that's why the little guys have to do the off the top rope stuff, because otherwise we're watching Marvel and Iron Man and Captain America, and it's all superhero fake crap. I mean, everybody knows it's fake, but you have to make it believable for it to be watchable.
Very true.
Well, here's another thing then, Dustin. We were talking a little bit about the draft possibly coming back in order to save SmackDown and Shane McMahon, you know, possibly maybe taking over SmackDown and taking over Raw and bringing superstars that he likes with him. But we're also sort of talking about a true heel. Do you feel that there's really – because the wrestling business is based around faces and heels. And right now we have a whole bunch of faces on the roster. We don't really have a heel. There's nobody that I can look – watch this and say, oh, well, he – I hate him. I don't like him.
They made the heel the authority, right? They
the authority just got cheered. The authority just got cheered for pedigreeing your face.
Right. You know? The authority got cheered because that is once again the WWE universe telling you they do not like Roman Reigns, right? And that is once again everybody realizing that it pays to have The Rock as your family member in this industry, right?
Yeah.
So there's a reason why Roman keeps getting a push, and it certainly isn't because of his great mic skills. It certainly isn't because he's just this physical specimen, even though I just saw some highlights of him playing football, and he should be in the NFL, I'll tell you that much. But he's just not there. I'm sorry. I wish I could think of an Attitude Era guy to compare him to. A Bradshaw, you know, a clothesline from Hell
APA,
Power
yeah.
guy
yeah.
that shows okay. up. He's the enforcer of the group, which is why he was great in the Shield, because you don't need him to be the voice. He can be that power guy who gets his shot, might hold the title like Diesel, might hold it for a little bit, but ultimately he can't carry the brand.
Can't carry it.
Yeah, he's the Robin to Batman, and we got no Batman right now. At least I hated Cena, but at least he proved. He could be a Batman. He could carry it. He could. It got Disney and really powder puffed and shitty, but he carried it. That is fine. You know, everybody at one time tried to carry it, and only a few could. And Cena carried it for a little while, and that's fine. But now someone else needs to take over, and Rollins was set to do it, but the injury happened. Now, listen, he's 29. It's an ACL, and it's an off-the-top rope move that took him out. So will he assess the situation and say, you know, no more of that? You know, I hope not. I just hope he stops doing any kind of anything that would involve him planting on his knee. Dude, before that tear, I can think of three clips in my brain right now where Rollins got flipped out of his FU from Cena, lands right on his feet, goes off the ropes, and comes back and hits Cena. So that is now an up-in-the-air flip. All of his weight's going directly onto his feet, a flip out of midair, okay? And that, to me, is something he can't do anymore. He can't take that chance because all it was that simple flip, and he buckled his knee. So that's the type of shit
that
I'm
bummed about.
His style
maybe changes a little bit here. Sure.
Right. I'm bummed because I think it was that style that made him so great.
And you know, and you're an HBK guy, and HBK used to, you know, do a lot of similar. He's very similar in his ring style to HBK too, because he could do both. He could match up with you, or he could, you know, go off the top rope, which is what HBK used to do. Final 4 minutes of the show here, and guys, I think overall it's been pretty good. We came in just to see how Ending Raw would be live on the air, and I think that's a good idea. I was against it at first, but I think it's a good idea. We will have some topics next week. You've already got two of them that we mentioned. But Dustin, you mentioned carrying the program. We're going to end with this. Carrying the program. Attitude Era, I think you, me, and Jason have been spoiled a little bit. Because in the Attitude Era, you had 3, 4, even 5 guys that could carry the program. When Austin went down and they did the whole running over with a car angle, well, then Triple H carried it for a little bit. And then all of a sudden, The Rock was able to step in and carry it. And then when Triple H went down with the ACL thing, his quad thing, rather, he had somebody step right in who was to carry it. And we were spoiled because we had so many big-time names at one time, whereas now we have none. And so it's sort of like, okay, if we had one of those guys now, they'd be set for the next 5 years. But the fact is they had 3, 4, 5 of them at the time, and now we're left with nothing. So – I mean, it's unfortunate, but, you know, I think WWE is trending in a certain direction with where they want to go, and that's what they want to do. So that's pretty much going to do it for us here, and we are going to see you all next week. Jason just had to step out for 1 second. Justin, are you still with me?
Yeah, I'm still with you.
I still hear you here on the phone. I'm going to sign off this here. So again, 2 minutes left to go. Just so you guys know, I'm going to do a couple of plugs here, do a couple of things. We are going to have overtime.news all week for all the best news, wrestling included, sports, pop culture, all that. We have Satellite Sundays every Sunday, 2 p.m. Make sure you check that out and hear all of us, Jason, Dustin, and I, as well as the Fantasy Jester. And every Monday at 10 o'clock right here, I promise you next time we will have topics and we will be prepared. You are listening to Off the Ropes, the brand new show here on Overtime.News. We'll see y'all next week. And in my heart, the Attitude Era lives on.
Dead man walking.
You've done it now.
News. Jason, anything to say before we go? Guess not. Have fun next week. We'll see you.